Chapter 9 The Three Ages. Early 19th century European archaeology was a confusing mystery. For most students of the European past, real history began with Julius Caesar and the Romans. This was nonsense, of course, for there were many earlier archaeological sites. But everything earlier than Caesar, polished stone axes, bronze swords, and often elaborate ornaments, was a jumble of finds stacked in the drawers and cabinets of museums and private collections. The chaos of artifacts and archaeological sites made no historical sense. The scriptures, a commonly used historical source, had nothing to offer. How could you create a framework for the remote past? Had different peoples used stone tools or developed metal swords? What were they like? Were there people living in Britain and other European countries who had resembled the Native Americans, as John Aubrey had suggested? See Chapter 1. No one knew what human societies had lived in Europe before the Romans. Few Europeans took archaeology as seriously as the Danes. The Romans had never conquered Denmark, which meant that its people felt a strong attachment to the country's ancient inhabitants. Archaeology was the only way of studying them, and developed alongside a strong patriotic interest in pre-Christian artifacts. But Danish excavators, like their English and French counterparts, wrestled with a confusion of archaeological finds. It was no coincidence that the first attempts to create order out of chaos arose in Scandinavia. In 1806, the Danish government set up a commission on antiquities to protect archaeological sites and to found a national museum. In 1817, its members appointed Christian Jurgensen Thomsen, 1788-1865, to set the national collections in order and put them on display. At the time, they were stacked in a church loft. Thomsen was the son of a wealthy merchant and was an enthusiastic coin collector. His tidy and precise mind made him the ideal person to put the museum in order. Anyone who collects coins seriously becomes a classifier, accustomed to placing objects in sequence according to their style. By all accounts, Thomsen also enjoyed meeting people and engaging in conversation. Add to this a gift for letter writing, which gave him contacts throughout Denmark and beyond, and you have an ideal museum official. The industrious Thomsen began by entering the collections into a ledger or logbook, just as in business. Each object received a number. New acquisitions were catalogued and numbered as well. This gave him immediate access to any object in the museum. Within a few months, he had catalogued 500 artifacts. The dull process of cataloging and ledger entry gave him familiarity with a broad range of prehistoric artifacts. The Copenhagen collections included thousands of stone tools from early hunting sites and rows of stone axes and adzes, a cutting tool with a blade set at right angles to the handle, used for woodworking far back in the past. There were beautifully made stone daggers, bronze swords, and numerous brooches. Cataloging was one thing, but making sense of the jumble of stone axes and small knives, bronze adzes, shields, and occasional gold ornaments was quite another. Thomsen observed that much of the collection came from burials, where people had been laid to rest alongside clay vessels or stone axes, and perhaps with brooches and pins. The groups of grave offerings varied from each other, marked by changes in the artifacts. After examining numerous burials, Thomsen noticed that some of the graves contained metal, but others only artifacts of bone or stone. He decided to employ the raw materials used to manufacture tools as the basis for classification. In 1816, he divided Danish history into three phases. The earliest, corresponding to what today we call prehistory, the time before written history, was the Heathen period. He subdivided this into three ages: the Stone Age, the Bronze Age, and the Iron Age. Thus was born the famous three-age system, which transformed perceptions of prehistoric times. The three-age system was based entirely on Thomsen's museum collections. The Stone Age was a period when only stone and antler, bone and wood, were used for tools and weapons. The Bronze Age followed, with bronze and copper artifacts. Then there was the Iron Age, when iron tools came into use. Thompson thought of the three ages as a time frame for the prehistoric past. He developed it carefully, using different groupings of finds in undisturbed burials and living sites. One might expect Thompson to have been an object-obsessed museum curator, but he was not. His museum galleries did display artifacts from the three ages, but they offered far more, for he made sure that his visitors knew that archaeology was not about objects, but about people. Thompson told museum visitors of burial mounds that dotted the countryside where once living men and women lay, of gold and bronze ornaments that had glittered on a woman's chest or glowed in the sunlight on a long-forgotten battlefield. The museum was open for 2 days a week, and then for longer periods. Every Thursday at 2 o'clock, Thompson would show visitors around, full of enthusiasm, even placing ancient gold necklets around young girls' necks. He made the past come alive. Thompson wrote only one book, a short guidebook to Northern antiquity, published in 1836, and read throughout Europe. In this, he described his three-age system, which was simple and based on well-documented museum collections. Thompson's three ages cut through the confusion. Within a surprisingly short time, the three-age system became the framework used to subdivide the prehistoric past. Archaeology is based on excavations and field surveys, but indoor research in laboratories is equally important. No one would call Thompson a field worker. He was, above all, a museum man. His career was in museum galleries. He only excavated once, in 1845, when he and a colleague investigated a Bronze Age burial. The dead man had been cremated, his sword and a fine brooch laid out on an ox hide. Thompson's excavation was remarkable for his accurate recording, a reflection of his precise mind and passion for detail. Thompson spent much of his time on small finds and tiny artifacts, but he also revolutionized the big picture of the past. With the development of the three-age system, the modern science of archaeology and archaeological classification was born. It still needed to be proved that the three ages followed one another in time, and they still needed to be dated. In 1838, a young university student, Jens Jakob Worsaae, 1821-85, came to meet Thompson. He had long been interested in archaeology and had acquired a large collection of antiquities. The highly intelligent Worsaae became an unpaid museum volunteer, but soon offended Thompson because he was not afraid to express his opinions and was a fluent writer. Fortunately, King Christian VIII thoroughly approved of Worsaae's work and sponsored the young man's research. Worsaae's first book, The Primeval Antiquities of Denmark, was published in 1843 and translated into English in 1849. It was a brilliant essay on the three-age system. Worsaae insisted that excavating archaeological sites was the only way to write Denmark's earliest history, using artifacts in the same way as a historian uses documents. The king was so impressed with young Worsaae that he sent him on a tour of the British Isles to study the remains of the Vikings, Scandinavian seafarers and traders between the 8th and the 11th centuries. This yielded another book, and on the strength of that, the king appointed Worsaae inspector for the conservation of antiquities. Worsaae traveled constantly, recording sites and saving many from destruction. Above all, he excavated numerous sealed stone and Bronze Age burials, recovering the dead themselves as well as their possessions, which included swords and shields, clay vessels, and the remains of leather garments. Such finds provided snapshots of different people and their technologies, glimpses of the three-age system unfolding in the past. Worsaae's excavations were highly significant. His careful observations confirmed that Thompson's three ages were in the correct time order. Until Worsaae's digs, the scheme had depended entirely on museum collections. Now it was based on excavations as well. As he worked, Warsay showed that archaeological research could produce facts about the past. When a well-preserved corpse of a woman came to light in the bog in southern Denmark, traditionalists who believed in legends claimed that it was the body of the legendary Queen Gunhild of early medieval times. Warsay publicly disagreed and showed her to have been an Iron Age individual. Much of Warsay's research was concerned with burial mounds. Indeed, a great deal of Denmark's past was preserved in such monuments, but by no means all of it. Along the country's coastlines lay hundreds of large shell heaps from earlier times, enormous piles of oysters and other mollusk shells. Some were simply rubbish heaps, but on others, people had lived and built houses. The first person to investigate these was Jeptis Steenstrup, 1813-97, professor of zoology, the study of animals, at the University of Copenhagen. He called all such sites Kojikin Modinger, or kitchen middens. Midden comes from the Danish word meaning kitchen scraps. The only way to understand the middens was by studying still living non-Western societies whose diet was mainly shellfish. Steenstrup and his colleagues, notably the English archaeologist John Lubbock, were particularly interested in the Fuegian Indians who lived at the southern tip of South America. Charles Darwin had described them during his Beagle voyage. He, and indeed Lubbock and Steenstrup, had a low opinion of their abilities and commented on the primitive lifestyles of shellfish collectors. The Danish government now appointed a three-scientist commission, including both Steenstrup and Warsay, to examine the middens. Other scientists were also brought in, including a zoologist, to identify shells. Warsay examined many shell heaps. His largest investigation was of a shell midden found during roadworks at Mailgard. A large cross-section of the mound revealed thick layers of oyster shells and mussels. He also recovered antler spearheads, stone tools, hearths, and evidence of long-term occupation. He described Mailgard as some kind of eating place. Steenstrup and Warsay were years ahead of their time. They not only studied artifacts, but also recorded the mollusk species found in the middens. This was the earliest known research into how people lived. Meanwhile, Warsay's colleagues studied ancient climate change, using layers of peat bogs and the plant remains in them. As the Ice Age ended, open country around ice sheets had given way to cold-tolerant birch forests. Then, as the climate warmed further, oak forests replaced birch. Steenstrup even identified the bones of migratory birds to establish the seasons in which the middens were in use. This was truly revolutionary archaeology, which emphasized ancient environments. Steenstrup published his work a century before such approaches became commonplace. Warsay was a major force in Scandinavian archaeology for decades. He taught prehistory at the University of Copenhagen, the first such teacher in Scandinavia. He left to become director of the National Museum in 1866. A post he held until his death in 1885. At the time of his death, Scandinavian archaeology was years ahead of its competitors. Warsay's rigorous application of the three-age system and his careful observation of occupation layers provided a general framework for archaeology in Northern Europe. His outline was much refined in later decades as the three-age system and detailed classifications of all kinds of prehistoric artifacts became routine throughout Europe. Thompson and Warsay laid the foundations for European prehistoric archaeology, indeed of archaeology generally. The three-age system brought a broad order to the prehistoric past. The Stone Age included the Sum Axes and Frieira's finds, Homo erectus and the Neanderthals, as well as early farming societies. The Bronze and Iron Ages covered the more recent periods of the past, up to the appearance of civilization in the Middle East and elsewhere and beyond. This general framework provided a kind of orderly bridge that linked the earliest known sites with much more recent times. but there remained significant gaps. Important discoveries in the river valleys of southwestern France and by the Swiss lakes would soon fill in the empty spaces with remarkable hunting societies and sophisticated farming communities.